Hello and welcome to another episode of Tosas Talking Tech. My name is Tom Covington, a technology integration specialist for the Bassett Unified School District.
And I'm Michael Jeffcott, the other technology integration specialist here at BUSD.
And welcome to Tosas Talking Tech podcast number 2. Okay, so podcast number 2. All of our first show jitters are out. Not that we had any, right?
None.
And today we have a couple of topics coming up for you that we think are going to be useful to you in the classroom. New to this podcast, we're going to be putting a lot of show notes up, and they will be on the Tosas Talking Tech Haiku page. So whenever we tell you that, oh, we'll stick it in the show notes, it'll be on the Tosas Talking Tech Haiku site under podcast 2 show notes. So, Mike, welcome back.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Glad to be here.
All right. Today we have a useful topic for you, we hope. It's the SAMR model. And we're going to explain what the SAMR model is and how it's used in the digital classroom. And this is intended just to be an introduction. We'll get into it in more depth later. But SAMR, Mike, can you tell me what the SAMR model is?
SAMR was actually created by Dr. Ruben Puente Dura. And it's a model that suggests a structure for the design and embedment of technology use in the classroom to have a significant impact on student outcomes.
So now that we got all this tech, how are we going to put it in the class and make it, you know, work for kids?
And so with the SAMR model, and it's kind of a ladder, as it's described, there's two major portions of it. The first one's called an enhancement, and it includes a substitution of technology. And the next one's augmentation.
And those are on the bottom part of the ladder under the enhancement. And then under the transformation section at the top, we have redefinition and modification. So starting at the bottom of the ladder, we have substitution.
Yeah, and substitution is basically when you're taking something that you've already been doing in the classroom and you're just simply replacing it with technology. Something you could do either way with paper, pencil, or you could actually use technology.
And for purposes of our explanation right now, we're going to use something we do in our class every day. Hopefully, which is note taking for our students.
And substitution, a good example would be students taking notes in your class. If before they took paper, pencil, use Cornell notes, now they simply use an app. So now they're doing it on an iPad or on a laptop, and they're taking notes just as they did with paper, pencil, but with technology. Substitution.
And there's no real change in the student engagement. If they were bored taking notes before, they're probably going to be bored taking notes with technology. So that's the key to the substitution level, is that the engagement level of the student doesn't really change. Yeah. And also within the SAMR model, there's a continuum of teacher-student kind of like engagement or leadership. And at the bottom level of the SAMR model and substitution, the teacher is still the driving force within the lesson here. And the students are passively getting the information.
So nothing functional has changed.
Not really. Not at this level. At the augmentation level, there is, again, that direct tool substitute. Like, we're couching everything in terms of taking notes. But here, there's an improvement in student outcomes, and it usually comes through immediate feedback. One way this can occur, especially when taking notes, is to use a back-channel tool like Today's Meet or Padlet. And what Today's Meet or Padlet allows them to do is to type their notes or to chat together in a room while the lesson's being delivered. So they're kind of thinking about their notes already. And this one enhances a little bit because on that teacher-student-centric continuum, this is starting to move away from being teacher-centric and a little bit more into being student-centric. Yeah, and they begin to become more engaged in that learning process.
Yeah, and it's still just an enhancement of the classroom content that they normally did before.
Yes, it is. Still enhancement.
But you do have some functionality improvements.
And there's immediate feedback for the student.
And so next on the SAMR model would be moving into that area of transformation. And the first level in that is modification. So this is when the tech allows for a significant task redesign. And with this, students are actually using things like apps like Notability for taking notes. And
there's also the screencasting tool, and then they can later go back and with the notes that they took screencasting, record audio to that too. So they're summarizing their notes right after they took it. It's a little bit of review in there as well.
And the nice thing with modification, it allows for ease of sharing, where in the past they couldn't really share their notes, allows them to collaborate in the classroom.
And lets them know that they're working for that public audience.
And it allows them to bring in other things like images into their notes. So some great apps that can do that right now for modification.
And each student in this note-taking, you know, we're staying within that note-taking realm. There's a personal stake within their note-taking. They know that somebody else is going to be looking it over or relying on their part of the notes for learning. And so there's that, you know, it's along that teacher-student continuum, it's moving more towards student-centric.
Yeah.
And then the last one is the redefinition of the task. And this is the highest level on the SAMR model. And it is complete emphasis on student-centered learning. The students learn new skills and concepts as they're completing this task. This is like the high-level PBL stuff too. In terms of note-taking, because we're couching all of it in terms of note-taking, they're doing some sort of a visual note-taking, adding pictures, drawing, and doodles around with it because they have to focus on listening as well as planning how to organize that information all at the same time.
And with this redefinition level, this is something that they could not do in the past. There's would be no way for them to recreate this process without this technology. Again, it's inconceivable that they could actually have done this in the past in their classroom.
Yeah, and the redefined task for note-taking would be for them to like sketch their notes, to both share it online, and then to provide answers to some feedback from other students that's in a public venue. So they never would have been able to do that task before without this technology. So we're going to be putting up a couple of resources for you up on in the show notes, and they're going to be some images that help convey the SAMR model.
Especially for those visual learners out there, there's some great graphics, little lesson design in there that show it, and some really good examples for them.
Yeah, we have some infographics that talk about specific class tasks and what they would look like with the SAMR model, like reading. What would substitution look like in reading or modification? And so those will be posted online, so you can go ahead and peruse and take a look at those. Today is just introductory. We just want you to get familiar with SAMR and that there's a SAMR term. And it's working with tech. Like we used to bloom up our lessons and get our students to a higher bloom level, SAMR is the same for technology. We want to get our students higher on the SAMR ladder as we can for some of the tasks that we do in our class.
And as like the Bloom model, it's not all about working at the highest level of blooms all the time. The SAMR model, you're not always working at that highest redefinition level. There's times when it's appropriate and then times that you might just need to substitute or augment the technology in the classroom.
Yeah, we're not saying that redefinition is better than substitution. What we're doing is letting you know that if you're using your tech this way, this is where it lands on the SAMR model. And while the higher level thinking and more student-centric models are going to be at that transformation level, the modification and the redefinition, sometimes all you're wanting to do is deliver lesson for the first time, and that modification or redefinition is going to work. So keep that in mind as you're perusing the resources we're going to throw online. And I think we're going to move with that. We're going to go ahead and move to our second section of our podcast today. And that's going to be what kind of tech we're using within our district right now. And what we're going to do is we're going to shine a spotlight on the green screen process and how we've been using it within our district. So, Mike, what is the green screen?
Well, basically, a green screen is just that. It's a screen that you can put up, normally green. A lot of this has been used in newscasts for years. You'll see the weather people, traffic. They'll have a motion behind them or a map going. And basically, they're filming. They're putting an image onto a screen and using that as a backdrop.
And with some of the technology that we've been able to introduce into the classrooms now, we've really been able to open up what used to be done on, you know, these high-end broadcasts to something as simple as an iPad app that we can open up and do those same type of expensive modifications for essentially little money, right?
Yeah, very little money. We experimented with some free apps Actually found a really great app that we tried for free. It worked well for us. We actually bought the app, and it was called VScope.
Yeah, VScope Live. It's in the App Store. We used it on the iPads. Android has some too, so if you want to use it with your phone, you can go ahead and do that. But essentially, any of these mobile platforms that you can record with, you can produce something through a green screen.
One of our first projects we did, we had a kindergarten here that was doing a project-based learning on buses and their usefulness in the community. And they went around and they filmed some buses. They borrowed a bus from the district office that took them on a tour, had images and videos that they wanted to incorporate into their final project, their public piece for their PBL. And we helped them actually put the backdrop using a green screen behind their students of the images from the tour they went on, and also videos. So a video was playing with buses in the background while the students were speaking.
And so this was done at the kindergarten level, but I see its applicability in all levels. You know, just putting the students into a scene or into a place where we normally couldn't get. Like, it'd be really unsafe to put kids in front of a bus. So let's put it on a green screen, and now the bus can, you know, be doing its thing behind the students while they're talking about it. So it's a really useful tool for getting students into a lesson, or like in this situation, putting some images up behind them that was useful within their presentation.
Yeah, it's a great way to get the content across. Students are able to incorporate things into their project that they just don't have time to speak about, but they can use in the background and can show to the viewer what they're talking about.
So you're thinking, how long is this going to take me to set this up, and how much is it going to cost me to get this done? To tell you the truth, it was almost shockingly fast how fast it went together. We kind of had an idea for green screen and hey, we can move this out. Let's see what it would take. And a Walmart trip later, where we got some nice neon green poster boards, stapled them to a wall in the corner of the BIC over here, and put an iPad up on a shelf, and we had a green screen studio.
And from there, it was basically just finding images that we could try and test out with. A quick Google search, found some images, put into the app itself. The images go into the photo app.
And then it replaces the green in the background with that image. And we were standing in front of a whole bunch of different places, from a campsite to the Hollywood sign to an active volcano. Really easy and intuitive to get in and to figure out what was going on in the app. So within, I think, I don't know, 20 minutes, we had our video green screen studio up and ready to go.
And we've actually put our kindergarten PBL green screen up on the Haiku website under teacher resources. And so we have that demo for you to see how it's used with this PBL project. And we put it under teacher resources PBL.
And so they can go on the Haiku site and take a look at that.
And also we'll have those in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put a link right up there. So all you got to do is click it. So green screen, you'll see it demoed by those kindergartners at Don Julian up on the site. Check it out. If you want any more information, go ahead and email us. You'll find our email address in the show notes. All right, section three for our podcast today is before you ticket. This is where we go over the steps to take before you put in a tech ticket for help, a couple of troubleshooting tips for you before you go ahead and put that tech ticket in. What's our topic for today, Mike?
So, big topic, what happens when my device is not turning on, it's not powering up, what do I do?
I think that's going to depend a lot on what device we have, and I think we can cover the three main devices we use in our district.
Mm-hmm. First one, iPads. What happens when that iPad just does not respond? You hit that home button, nothing showing up. So with the iPads, one thing you want to do if you can't get it to turn on is do a hard reset. And with that, you're going to hold down that home button, the depressed button on the front, and the power button, usually at the top right, depending how you're holding the iPad, and hold them down together at the same time for about 20 seconds.
And what's that going to do, Michael? How are they going to know that they did it correctly?
If it's done correctly, it'll force it to restart, and you'll actually hear it powering down, and you'll see it come back on with an Apple sign.
And once they see that Apple sign, they know that they've done it correct.
Yes.
All right.
Now, for some reason, that doesn't happen. Your next step would be to make sure that device is charged. And with that, you want to get yourself a cord, plug it in, and leave it charging.
Yeah, we want to get a good charge of about an hour on that thing. You don't want to try this with a couple percent.
Yeah. Yeah, just be wasting your time if you try it right away. So plug that in, leave it be, and then go ahead and try that same process where you hold down that home button and the power button at the same time for 20 seconds.
And if they've done both of those and it still doesn't work?
That's when you're going to have to put that My Tech Desk ticket in.
Okay. The next thing that most people have within our district are laptops. So if you have a laptop and it's not turning on for some reason and you opened it and you've pushed buttons and nothing's happening, the first thing to do is to check and make sure that your laptop was charged. And it's easy to do. First, make sure that your charger is plugged into the wall. Especially for this piece, you don't want it plugged into a power strip. If you can get it directly into the wall, and we've made sure that that outlet works, because I've done that before, where I've plugged it in and say, hey, this thing's not charging, and then realized, oh, well, the outlet doesn't work. So once we made sure the outlet works, we know it works, and we plug our charger directly in there. Most of the chargers that the computers in the district have a little LED light on them somewhere. If that light lights up as green, that means it's getting power and ready to charge. When you see that green light, plug it into your laptop. Your laptop should give some sort of signal that it's charging. Some of them have lights on the case that change colors when they're charging. Others, the light on the charging station itself, the LED, will turn from green to orange, making you know or letting you know that, hey, I'm charging now. So once we're sure that it's charging, you want to leave it charging for a little bit, because if it's completely drained, it's going to take a while to power back up. And then we're going to hold the on button. And we're going to hold that on button for about 10 to 15 seconds just to make sure that, you know, the connection's being made, that the computer is getting the signal, hey, I want you to turn on.
So basically you're forcing it to shut down, start over again.
Yeah. So if it's on and the screen's black and you can't see it, that holding that button down, it'll force it to restart wherever it's at in its procedures. So it'll clear all that memory out, start it over again, hopefully from scratch. And if you see the startup screen start, well, then we've solved that issue of it not coming on. If it still doesn't respond, it's time to find another computer and put in a tech ticket.
And our final device that we have is the Surface Pros. And with these, similar to the iPad situation, want to make sure that you have power for it. It's charged up. If you know that, you're going to go ahead and hold the power button on it and the volume up button at the same time, and again for 20 seconds.
Yeah, this one takes a little bit longer, and you'll know it works if your Surface Pro does a little chime and shows that it's starting up again.
So again, that's the power button and volume up button at the same time. But if that's not working, you want to go ahead, plug it in, let it sit and charge for about an hour, and then try that again. Again, like the other devices, if that doesn't work at all, you're going to have to go ahead and find another computer or device to go ahead and put in My Help Desk ticket.
And that is at www.myhelpdesk.org.
And that one's going to be directed right towards IET, Information Education Technology.
So before you ticket, remember, check all your power connections and try and force that sucker to restart. Let's go ahead and move on to our last segment of the day, and that's our Tech Minute. Here's where we're hoping to give you at least a quick tech tip that you can take with you, not only for your teaching, but for life in general, and help streamline things and make things easy.
And for this one, we're going to do it on how to Google like a pro. So Google is probably one of the better search engines on the web. Google.com, pretty much everyone knows, go-to for searching for everything that interests you, images, videos that you need. But a lot of people don't realize that Google also has some unique search engines. The first one I can think of is news.google.com. This is where you're going to search for current events, articles from newspapers to television broadcasts that you can find on news.google.com.
And those news stories will be up to date, too. They'll be some of them even minutes old, especially if you're working on something that's a breaking story. News.google.com is probably one of the best places to go. Like news, images.google.com is probably the best search engine there is. Google works hard at getting and indexing almost every image that it can. And finding a picture or an image is really easy with images.google.com. If you're going to send your students there to look for stuff, make sure that whatever they Google, they put four kids in it as well. That makes sure that the filtering is on and that it's going to bring back only appropriate search results.
And nice with images.google.com, they've also got one just for students now, googlejr.com, which will allow you even more filters on there and come up with educational resources for the classroom that you know are safer than just a plain Google search.
Our next resource from Google is google.com/shopping. If you're looking to make a purchase, you can shop and compare prices right from there, google.com/shopping.
And then we have one on finance. They have a google.com/finance, which if you want to check the stock market, try out websites for a quick overview, if a calculator for a mortgage or your retirement date.
It's all right there at google.com/finance. Next up is maps.google.com. This map, they have satellite photos. It's one of the most up-to-date maps in the world. It's always being populated. And not only that, you can go to maps.google.com for street views of a lot of places as well. Look there for all your mapping needs.
And then an overlooked one is video.google.com. And this is Google's search engine for just videos. I mean, a lot of people think of YouTube, but they've had this for a while. You can find a lot of educational videos on the internet through videogoogle.com.
And speaking of YouTube, that's another one that you can go to. Several years ago, Google bought YouTube, and it is the premier video web sharing website. And you can go there to look for some educational videos as well.
And the next one up is scholar.google.com. It's another project Google created where you can actually search for scholarly papers that they have indexed in their search engine.
And the last one we're going to highlight today is books.google.com. It's a great way to jump into some literature. You can check out a book online. You can read some passages. And you can also find out where to buy copies of popular books that you're searching. So lots in Google. We'll go ahead and put that little page up on the show notes if you want to learn more. You can go ahead and go there and download it. So I think that's going to be it for the podcast today. Come back next time in episode 3. We will have an interview with some of our educational leadership within our district talking about where tech's going within the next few years. But until then, may your tech always be working, may your tickets be answered quickly, and may you always remember to save your work frequently. From the Dog Pound at the BIC, this is Tom Covington
and Michael Jeffcott saying goodbye for now.